And we come back, dear listeners, obviously there from the extended break, but we're coming back obviously because we're starting off with the unpacking for the next program. Obviously that's in your lineup, that's in your menu, that's in your dietary provision early in the morning, and obviously wherever you find yourself, good morning, good morning, good morning. Hope a lot of you probably would be happy for tomorrow, the 20th, in the wise world, the wise but not so wise words of Helmut from the Home Run, where he obviously wishes all the best to teachers, police officers, and anyone else from the public service who are going to stimulate the Namibian economy on Wednesday, tomorrow, basically. But nonetheless, for the rest of us plebs, or plebeians, as the Romans used to call us, which are just, you know, ordinary citizens, good morning, and I do hope that you've got your cup of coffee at hand, or whatever brew. I'll just stick to it being a brew. I won't, assume that you probably might be warming up with something else. As long as it's not breaking fluid, please, guys, don't do what I read 10 years back. What happened to Russian lumberjacks when they completely, you know, finished the vodka in the bar? However, we're not on any vodka. We're not on any other particular sort of like hot stuff, which might try to give us some internal warmth through our digestive system. No, we are getting our dietary, you know, or new dietary sort of like provision for this morning session here from the Unpacking here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. The Unpacking today, obviously, for the next week, just being sort of like navigated by myself, Dwight, in terms of that my good colleague Mike, it's just taking a few days off in terms of whatever he's doing, that's up to him. Now, okay, I actually prepared a very nice little intro for this morning because it is based upon our latest e-paper that obviously that we brought out back in yesterday, that being the Monday session specifically. But it has in its own right a very strong message that we should have taken heart, and all the way back to 2024 when we had an opinion piece also submitted specifically in our e-paper, and I'm pulling it all the way back to 2024. But at that specific discussion, talking point, is something that resonates very strongly with what we have obviously going for us today in terms of looking at where Namibia's unexplored talent should be. The unexplored talent is a discussion, obviously, of doing what you have not done before, expanding into what has not been expanded into before, approaching new or approaching old ways of doing business with possibly new. I don't want to use the word invention. I want to stick to the aspect of just adding more in order to expand and proliferate a certain sector or an industry. Now, it steps in from the article that I wrote myself, the one of that's in the e-paper of Monday, and that obviously being yesterday's session or yesterday's particular edition. And it's the e-paper that looks at the talking point of disruption. Now, the article I wrote is obviously based upon a quote that the ICT, or the vice president for Huawei Southern Africa, Hannah Hanshu, highlighted specifically that ICT, that's information communication technology, the industry or the sector itself, is still the biggest disruptor the traditional sectors that you find across an economy. So in ICT, for example, or what ICT does to some sectors primarily, like I realized back in last year, I had to go and cover a specific event here at, what's that? that facility, that tourism facility, Grossbaumen here outside Okahania. But the downside was, since I also had to stay over there, you were immediately seeking out Wi-Fi or any internet conveniences at the bungalow that you are booked into. The concern from that was that when we discovered, that's now us who were all taken to this facility by the organizers of said particular event, is that we discovered that there was only Wi-Fi being offered in the conference facility that we had to, that we had to make use of, and the restaurant. For anywhere else on the facility itself, even at your own particular, you know, bungalow that you would be booked, that you were booked into, you didn't have access to any Wi-Fi facility there, which was a great disappointment, specifically since many of the other participants came from Southern Africa, from Botswana, from South Africa, from Eswatini. No, not Eswatini, Lesotho. There was another country, Zimbabwe. And the core concern there was they wanted to, yes, they wanted to still participate, but they also wanted to literally, you know, still stay connected in one or other way with hope, with whatever they've got going back at home, family, work, you name it. Because some of them were business people as well that were brought there, business delegates that were brought there as well. And the concern was they felt disconnected. Now, for those of you that obviously read the Monday edition of the e-paper, you would have known why I used or started with the talking point of disruption. Our discussion for this morning is based upon disruption. It is primarily based upon disruption. Oh, and since I forgot, you can come through, dear listeners, at 0832 888 401. I'd like to hear your particular take specifically on disruption in any sector in the Namibian economy, because today is just as good a day for disruption to actually happen. And disruption is actually needed, because disruption helps with, well, new ways of doing business, potential expansions, the ability for, well, I just realized it was a little bit loud there. The ability for, you know, the sought after economic, growth and economic expansion that the economic planners, policymakers, and, you know, all other particular proponents that try to stimulate, encourage, advise on the next pathways to take. Because our biggest concern here would be, guys, that we are still too reliant on the extractive sector. We are still too reliant on the extractive sector. And it has to be a scenario that we've got to change by hook or by crook. Okay, not by crook. Please, not by crook. Let me throw that adage out of the window. That specific, you know, idiom. Let me throw it out of the window. Let's rather just say, also not by any means necessary, because that technically means, flouting any potential laws that are in place to protect something for future generations. We also don't want to use that phrase. So what are we left with? We're basically left with, do what you can do under the current circumstances. Do what you can do. So, I wanted to bring to you the disruption. The disruption opinion piece that we had back in 2024. The disruption piece back in 2024 was written by a contributor that I also interviewed at the end of last year regarding entrepreneurial endeavors on school, you know, teaching children or teaching teenagers at, you know, when they start in school, in high school, the aspects of directly interacting with a market, directly producing for a market. And if you've read that article that I also produced and listened to the particular feature that we had here on Eagle FM, you would have known who I'm technically talking about. I'm talking about Mr. Danny Mayer from SME Compete at that stage, who shared, you know, some of the interesting insights, because as he laid it out, in many cases, we do find the people. We do have the people that you just need to support them just that little bit more. Then the expansion will happen. Then the proliferation of the person's business venture will kick off, will take flight. It will just grow wings and it will just fly. But I'm not just talking about support. I'm also not just about calling, you know, but blindly calling for any format of, yeah, show up and just blindly support people. No, I'm not calling for that. What I am calling for is also not a market liberalization approach. Because, I mean, when people come in, okay, not people, but what I've seen technically from an international perspective, is countries like the United States are no longer like open market scenarios or free market templates. They're no longer. Even the venture capital discussion that we are trying to also promote, or the template that we're trying to promote here in an African context, you know, seeking access to financing, is an idea that technically comes through from the British and from the Americans, and it's about their money, their investment opportunities, seeking new avenues for growth. Yes. But not everyone is also savvy to a stock market or to an a stock exchange for that matter. Because in Namibia, we face two things. We face how easily the money can be moved around. It's a very basic principle. It's very basic. There is no, don't overcomplicate the thinking. Just think to yourself, how do you make the money move around? Instead of how you say, how do I make money? You just have to think about, how do you move the money? Even yourself as a business person, how do you move the money? Because you don't really own the thing. You don't really own the thing. Now, I've once again veered off course, but the concern that we've got to face here is we are facing certain particular economic developments in our own economy that's not going anywhere. I'll say it again. It's not going anywhere. You won't see it move one iota in a positive direction that you would want it to move, because there's no new developments taking place in it. Nothing new. People are talking about at one stage, at the start of this year and at the end of last year, about what Kenya has achieved with its fintech. You can leave that. You just leave it. Currently, right now, we primarily just have the banks, the commercial banks. But it's the same guys continuously innovating. So they're not technically disrupting. They're innovating for themselves. They're innovating for their benefit. They're innovating to keep their space occupied, or governed, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, in terms of protecting their, you know, their bread and butter. That's what they're doing. So, as I said, back on Monday, or that's yesterday's scenario, or yesterday's e-paper, disruption is needed. Disruption helps with growth. Disruption helps with expansion. But when you come to one particular sector, which is the banking sector, back in 2024, Mr. Danny Meyer submitted an opinion piece. I assume he submitted it with us, or he sent it to us, which was titled as "The Banking Sector Needs a Disruptor." This is 19 August 2024, a whole 2 years ago. A whole 2 years ago. In it, he notes, is a supportive banker a contradiction in terms? Many entrepreneurs who have applied, I'm just, you know, quoting what is in this particular opinion piece, many entrepreneurs who have applied for business loans and other forms of funding support have often claimed this at consultative meetings and during mentorship sessions. Is a supportive banker a contradiction in terms? Meaning the terms that are offered to you, the applicant, to you, the loanee, to you, the one in need, who needs financing to do one thing, to do another thing. The scenario also of where he highlighted in the next paragraph, just after that, an anecdote narrated by participants at gatherings is that bankers are eager to provide an umbrella for protection during stormy times. But when it rains, they hurriedly snatch back that umbrella, leaving borrowers to fend for themselves. And remember, they themselves, the bankers as well, come in for their pound of flesh. They come in for their pound of flesh because you borrowed from them. So they want their piece. And they're not just taking the skin. They want a pound. Now, disruption has to speak towards what are we doing? Now, I'm tying this also into the conversation and the article. I actually wrote two articles, but the article based upon the Standing Committee of Economy and Industry that also met with the Ministry of Finance, NAMFISA, and with the Bank of Namibia regarding, and the Justice, the Ministry of Justice's, the Law Reform Department, in terms of looking at the impact of the laws that govern usury, credit agreements, and the micro-lending perspective. And in its broadest sense, it was the micro-lending that they were actually, that these MPs, members of parliament, were actually seeking out. Now, at the heart of a conversation, there's always two people, a conversation which is always, let's say, a two-way street, but there's always two parties. You can never say that the one party is multiple voices, because if it is one entity speaking to another participant, usually it seems like two people. Because if you say I'm talking to a crowd, the crowd standing in front of me, that every single individual in there can hear and have a different idea, completely different from each other standing right, even though they're standing right next to each other. So what am I talking about? So in that particular discussion was a question that came up from, I forgot the lady's name, but she's an MP, and she's a member of parliament and she's in that standing committee. And she asked a question, regarding did the NAMFISA ever have a engagement with labor unions regarding the Microlending Act, the Usury Act, the Credit Agreements Act, in terms of the impact that microlenders have on the salaries of working Namibians. The concern from this is, and it's the question that I also asked Helmut, not in the same day, but 2 weeks back. What is the overall idea of Namibia? Do we really want to be a socialist country with a hybrid approach, with an actual hybrid approach? Or are we clutching at straws and trying to maintain a facade of, this is an investor-friendly economy. Investor-friendly obviously speaks towards, yes, it's got these capitalistic features and characteristics, and we want you to come and do this. And then there's always the catchphrase that you hear, come and create jobs. It's almost like the executive, meaning the cabinet in Namibia, always, every minister. I've heard this do this when it comes to an economic or an industry development approach or an extractive sector approach, come and create jobs. They always finish sentences off with, come and create jobs. So they pitching it to the private sector. Come and create jobs. When that question by the Standing Committee was posed to Namfisa about did they ever consult or engage with labor unions, you know, my perspective over the past 5 years has changed about labor unions. I'll be honest with you, and if you're a unionist yourself, you need to think hard also about your approach to disruption and your approach to innovation. There was a labor dispute at the start of this year with one of Namibia's well-known food manufacturers in the country. And from the few articles that I read about this engagement, there was no clear reason as to why that strike was happening. No clear reason. In a great sense, it sounded greatly to me like economic sabotage and great disruption, because the accusations that were laid forth were they find out that people who had been working there for 10 years were on a certain salary scale, and other people that joined yesterday were earning more than the people that were there for 10 years. But no one goes and interrogates the skill sets, the personal investment that the person that's been there for 10 years has put into themselves. It's not the absolute reason I can give you, but it's my own personal story as well. I realized I cannot sit still in one position for the rest of my life. I cannot. I must invest in myself. I must add more skills to myself. I've added since switching over from working in advertising sales into journalism, into media in its entirety. I've added so much skill sets to myself. I'm probably overqualified for any particular, field role, but I love the field role. And it's a discussion based upon the value that you espouse, that you generate. So that's the disruption I'm bringing. Yes, I even got AI training, even though AI training was not necessary specifically, because for some reason, people love being tied to the trends that develop. I'll explain to you why, because AI has actually been there a lot longer than you think. I've mentioned it with Google, and I've mentioned it that technically AI has been ever present in terms of deciphering, computing, and processing whatever workload humanity has thrown at it. AI has been there longer than you actually think it had been. Now, AI is currently the disruptor. Yes, and there's still some technology executives from the United States who are still spouting the particular sort of like, I'll call it a trope. They're spouting the trope of most white-collar jobs will be, replaced by AI functions. And they're still not answering the question of, okay, so you're getting rid of the human who has to do the job, but who's going to buy your products if the human doesn't have work? And if the human doesn't have a salary, who's going to buy your products? At one stage, I was told, no, that's a rubbish perspective, Dwight. How do you get... And this was back in 2024 with the disruption opinion piece that Mr. Mayer wrote. No, that's a rubbish perspective. And I spoke, and I actually had the discourse with the same family member that actually helps me with understanding certain particular political science perspectives and industrial psychology perspectives. And then you go and sit there and think to yourself, the technology pioneers in the world are still not answering the core questions of what do you do if you're going to replace much of the production capabilities, that's the workforce, meaning humans, with some sort of AI function. Who's going to feed in the information you need? Who's going to place the orders for the business? If you're a manufacturing business, if you're a shipping business, if you're a transport business, who's going to place the orders? Because an AI doesn't need to travel. An AI doesn't need to eat. An AI doesn't need to pay tax. Once again, the only people speaking about that direct threat, which is a disruption, are the neutral economists. Once again, the neutral economists. They're the only people I listen to. Because they're actually the only ones that would tell you, look at it from a different perspective. The disruption function also has to feature a few things where you find yourself. Where you find yourself is also when you have to rely on an ecosystem. An ecosystem that you perceive is the safe bet. An ecosystem that you perceive is, since you've seen the other templates that exist in the Namibian market, so I can probably do that. You know, I can try and go into that particular approach, or I can try and venture into that particular industry itself. When you look at disruption and you look at the various sectors, when it comes to manufacturing, you've got to know what you're going to make, what you have to make. When it comes to manufacturing, you've got to know what you have to make. And secondly, you must have, they now call it the offtake agreements, as per the green industries and green hydrogen's developments over the past couple of years. And I agree, an offtake agreement is crucial. It is important because it firstly secures the supply or the first batch of what you're making to sell. It secures the cash flow, basically. When the moment you deliver that first batch to that customer that you signed that offtake agreement with, it's the first moment that you get, okay, there's the first cash injection coming through from this deal, coming through from the endeavors that I've been, you know, sweating and developing for the past 5 years. That's now if you're in the green hydrogen sector. If you're potentially anywhere else, it's going to be a tough sell. It's going to be a tough sell. I'll say it again, it's going to be a tough sell. It's not going to go anywhere quickly, and it's not going to do anything dramatic. Now, the reason why I identified the banking sector, which is part of the overall financial sector, but they call it the banking sector in the financial sector, and then obviously the standing committee's engagement with the representatives of the non-banking sector, which was basically a question about whether the laws actually protect people from microlenders. Well, the consumer can protect themselves. You just need to know what you need the money for. If you have, and I'll have to call it what it is, if you have irresponsible budgeting in your personal life, no one can do anything about that. That's your fault. You can't be a bleeding heart to every scenario, every day, or you can't, okay, I'm not talking about, you know, specifically to the MPs, because to me it sounded like that question was very personal, that micro-lending question. I don't know if you guys had the opportunity of, ever seeing that particular live stream that was done by the National Assembly. I mean, the question itself, when you read the question, if you've ever heard the question, do the laws that we have actually protect people from microlenders? You see, life is about choices. If you made a decision to go borrow money, you have a responsibility contractually, because there would be a contract that you had to sign. And there was a pre-check in terms of eligibility for whether or not they can borrow you or lend you this money. And from what came, from what I heard, specifically like with the, the government workers or the public servants, you guys have the payment deduction management system, which only allows 5 deductions on your salary before it hits your bank account. And then you go borrow more money from the now diminished amount. That is not the fault of the microlender, because the microlender does not know. That is your fault. It's about you living the life that you want to live, not the microlender. Now, the reason why I'm tying this all up into disruption, the reason why I'm highlighting disruption so greatly, is we've got to understand as consumers what our role is. We've got to assess the products we actually interact with. We've got to understand whether or not there are alternatives. Currently, right now, in the banking sector, for example, there is only limited choice. You can only choose from 4 core banks. One is Namibian. The other 3 are South African subsidiaries. You can only choose from 4 core banks. If anyone else comes and brings any other bank that supposedly is still in Namibia, I have not seen an overall and a convincing marketing campaign, or which is an advertising campaign basically, about them getting into the consumer retail approach, into the consumer retail banking approach. And the perception with consumer retail is it's not just about car and household loans or house or home loans. It's actually selling bank accounts directly to you, the consumer. Bank accounts directly to you. Because how else would we achieve the economic goals, the industrial goals, the growth goals that NDP6 wants to, you know, wants to instill in all of us? How else, guys, will we actually reach these goals? How else will we try and generate the value, the growth across this country? How else? I'll tell you now, I don't see any change. Moving through Windhoek, driving through Windhoek, interacting with people on a regular basis, I don't see any change. But I read about the extensive articles regarding the all the work taking place in the extractive sector. That's the only disruption taking place. People that have a better or stronger currency versus the Namibian dollar, innovating, entering, buying and selling and participating in the extractive sector. And I'm actually now starting to support the endeavor specifically of the land bill. And I think it should actually be expanded into a land and mining bill. A mine should not be bought and sold the outside there in London or in New York. A mine. The hole in the ground in Namibia. It should not. Not even the legal entity that is established in Namibia in order to administer the activity of extracting whatever resources in the ground should not be bought and sold out there. It should not be bought and sold out there. Or transferred of ownership out there. Because that's not disruption. Disruption is if you allowed, for example, like the small scale miners, and told them, hey, listen, guys, we as the Ministry of Mines and Energy, we will allow you guys to come forth. We'll provide you with what's the seismic support in terms of looking for the deposits, because many of those, if the one time, the two times that I actually met small scale miners, those are guys that have been struggling there in the Erongo region for years. They've been living there for years. Do you know what's the core? Do you know what's the core concern? They are just not reaching the dream they've got in their mind. They're just not achieving it. The dream is also not about getting the license, the prospecting license, then seeking the funding, and then running to any international investor out there that's probably sitting in a little coffee shop here in Windhoek, or even in one of the hotels, the luxury hotels here in the capital, just waiting on that golden opportunity, because that's literally how Fish Rod began. You know, it was a perchance meeting. That's literally how Fish Rod began. It's literally the same thing over and over and over. Yes, let the deal be done. But here's the concern. You and I will never be able to disrupt in the mining sector. Never. You and I, you listening now, right now to Unpacking the Day, right now on this 19th of May, you and I will never be able to disrupt the mining sector. Because the mining sector will only move into the next logical direction and they will automate. And then all these labor unions for the mining sector will be in the cold. I'll say it again. Then all these labor unions in the mining sector will be in the cold. It's the only logical direction they will go. I'll say it again. It's the only logical direction they will go. Look, the evidence is there. The information exists. The evidence is there. The information exists. Margaret Thatcher literally seppuku'd. If you know what seppuku is, well, she literally, you know, committed honorary suicide. Not herself. I'm talking about her own mining industry, which is the coal mining industry in the UK. She literally sacrificed it in order to change the economic direction of the United Kingdom from becoming a economy that was producing its own things, but people were, you know, they only finished high school. They, standard of living. Yeah, standard of living was sorted out in the UK. This is now up to the 1970s to the 1980s. And then she literally took a dagger to the heart of the coal mining sector and then a dagger to the heart to the other manufacturing side of the United Kingdom. Much of it obviously was to try and, you know, destroy labor unions. It's the same thing that the Americans have also been doing. They've been doing their best to destroy labor unions. Now, if a board meeting somewhere else in the world and a meeting in a coffee shop here in Windhoek is not the board meeting, that is just the contact. First point of contact. There's nothing you can do. I'll just say it. There's nothing you can do, guys. If a board meeting somewhere decides in Canada, in the United States, in the UK, and somewhere in the EU, you know what? Namibians are just not worth it. But we can automate functions in this mine. They will do it. They will do it. We are continuously battling towards an economic uncertainty which we do not know of. We still have the 74% of Namibians who are below 35, from 35 and down, who still need economic certainty. To rush them all into the universities and the private institutions, higher institutions, and the vocational training aspects is probably a bit too late. A bit too late. Because the disruption has to come from allowing certain developments to take place in certain sectors. I'll tell you another disruption as well, for those of us who have an issue with SACCO as well. The only disruption, which is a positive disruption, which I have greatly benefited from, which I still greatly support, which I still greatly love, is the proliferation of South African retail in the Namibian economy. They are the only ones employing people. They are the only ones growing into every town. If you hear there's a property developer trying to build a mall somewhere, you will see them take up shops, shopping space first. You will see them taking up shopping space first because they know the Credit Agreements Act works in their benefit. They know the banking system works in their benefit. They know that there's established local transport capacity in Namibia. They know all this. Do you, as a Namibian, know this? Have you gone and observed? Have you gone and looked at things? Have you gone and cited what are the new developments taking place in your town? Has your local town council, municipal council, your village council come and promoted to you, the community member out there, about the latest developments and how you will participate in this? Have they? No, really, guys, have they? Just go and think to yourself. These are the societal impacts that we need, the interventions that we need, versus the allowed developments that are taking place. Have you seen your local council approach you? Have you heard of your local council calling for town hall meetings? Because there's a whole bunch of town halls. No, not town halls, but there's a whole bunch of halls here in Windhoek specifically. Schools. I don't know if City of Windhoek actually has a town hall. Because they don't have a town hall. But before I actually continue, guys, let's quickly take a short break. And we come back right after this. This is the Unpacking the Day here from Windhoek, from the capital, with me, Dwight. You and my company from 8 a.m. up until 10 a.m. Let's see each other after the break.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ikurane ngeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutete okoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovandu.
So, coming back there from the extended break, which actually just allowed me to a little bit to breathe. But yes, you're still here in the company of yours truly. That's myself, Dwight. You're in my company all the way from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. here on Unpacking the Day. We're doing it for the foreseeable week here from Windhoek. Just so that you know, if you're wondering where my colleague Mike is, he's just having a good rest. That's all. Just plain, straightforward rest. So, that update aside, and where we left off primarily about the economic developments that we've got to see, that we wish to see. Well, 6 months is a bit quick, but it's also not shouting, you know, any riveting developments to write home about, because much of the developments are actually just in agriculture and in mining. I cite that particular example to you about disruption, because disruption is the overall study. But how it actually manifests on the ground takes its form based upon what is put in front of it. What is happening in its sector? What is being achieved in much of the particular economic or commercial activity that is sought after by whoever is the proponent for said particular economic or commercial activity? If you guys have ever noticed, and specifically to many sectors in our country, we actually need a lot more labor. But we've got unemployed people. But we need a lot more labor. And I'm not talking about you going to look at a, you know, you go buy a newspaper and you look at all the vacancies in there. Much of those vacancies are highly skilled people. Highly skilled meaning they should have finished a university degree or diploma, or they should have, you know, achieved a certain certification level with a vocational training center, or they should have met certain particular industry requirements in terms of industry certifications, which is also the same, similar to the vocational scenario. But it's all these particular facets that speak towards we need people who have invested in themselves. And that's at the heart of everything. The disruption in great part is dependent upon people who have invested in themselves. You have invested in yourself. If you've recently graduated, congratulations. Congratulations. You've invested in yourself. You have invested in yourself. I'll say it again. You've invested in yourself. Well done. It's not a company paying for your tertiary education. There was a time that was a perk in some companies in Namibia. I still don't know if it's still the same thing. But that was usually based upon if the person came there to that company as, you know, on a certain particular package in terms of what they're going to earn and what role they're going to play. But in greater sort of like economic function and engagement between an employer and employee was that the employer hoped that the employee first achieved certain particular industry requirements, which would have been at least a university qualification or at least a vocational training certification. Because that's how our economy is being structured. But it's also a warped vision. I'll say it again. It's also a warped vision. Why is it warped? Look, there's nothing wrong with being a functioning literate to an extent. I didn't want to use the opposite. But the biggest concern here has also been there are certain things we're not doing that also will help with economic activity. There are certain things we're not participating in that will also help with economic activity. We Namibians, we need to make our own clothes, which includes our own underwear, which includes selling to fellow Namibians. Please, guys, and please, please, this is my personal plea. Leave the traditional clothing discussion for when you want to feel traditional. Look at what people wear every day. Look at what people wear every day, and you meet that need. That is disruption. You meet a need. You don't meet a need because you feel fancy. You don't meet a need because you want to have, out of the goodness of your heart. No one cares about the goodness of your heart. But people want to know, can I buy the thing? Can I use the thing? Can I own the thing? And never make things for free. Never make it for free. That's what people want to know. People want to know, how do we go about this? What are we going to do about this? Am I going to own this particular thing? How often will you bring out this product? Because disruption happens everywhere. Do you know what we also need more about? And this is where we actually need to be fanciful. The creative industry. We need to produce more because we can create more jobs in the creative industry. Yes, an artist will just work for themselves. Yeah, we sure, we know. Because if you're going to ask that question, if your brain, your train of thought was running to an artist, definitely they will just work for themselves. So that's a one-man, one-woman approach. I'm talking about something else. And an artist is a musician, or the person is actually a performing artist, or the person is actually a real artist. They paint or they sculpt, which are just one of the two limited forms by which they produce art. But that's it. Because we need more art galleries. Art galleries are literally like distribution points for people who want to support an artist. You buy their work. There's a whole bunch of beautiful works at the National Art Gallery, at the, this FNCC thing here. There's beautiful works. We've got talent. They are Namibians with talent. They are disrupting in their way. But you don't know about it. Because it's only in Windhoek, or it's probably just in Swakop. I once saw one of the most beautiful, I won't say most, but one of the most beautiful landscape photography hung up or displayed in a coffee shop, in a spa shop here in Windhoek, the coffee shop of a spa retail shop. Now, when you as a customer come to a coffee shop, you're not there to look at art or to look at the decor or to look at the layout of the coffee shop. You're there to have a cup of coffee. You're there to eat your pie. You're there to eat your breakfast. You're there to enjoy the setting of being able to spend your money with the original business, the coffee shop. You're not there to support the artist or the photographer who displayed very beautiful landscape photography about the Namibian desert, about the Namib desert, and certain other particular aspects around the Namib desert. It was beautiful photography, guys. It was beautiful photography. But the photographer was being treated like a pet, what was treated like a pet project, like a charity project. That's how the photographer was treated. I felt sorry for the photographer. I was invited to come and write about these lovely landscape photos, because it's landscape, not landscape like you think about it, you know, where, you know, you turn your phone on the side and you take a wide shot. No, I'm talking about actual landscape. It's a landscape photograph. It's a photograph about a piece of land. But it's the setting, the angle, and the lighting, and the angle of the sun, and all that that plays a part. And the camera that probably was used definitely cost more than 50,000 Namibian dollars. Definitely cost more than 50 grand. 50 grootes. It definitely cost more than that. But this guy's photos were hanging in a coffee shop. In a retail shop. A coffee shop in a retail shop. Now, if I've ever seen the biggest misalignment of talent, of what you produce to feed yourself, then it's the things happening in this country. It's the things happening in this country. For example, City of Windhoek has a museum here on Robert Mugabe. And that's besides the ministry, the MASAC's own ministry, MASAC's own museum, I call it the coffee shop, because the coffee percolator, let me call it the coffee percolator, it's not a coffee shop, the actual coffee percolator, because that's what that museum looks like, the Independence Museum. It's a coffee percolator. You guys can literally feel offended, for those of you who, you know, love that building. That thing has many design flaws in it, specifically the stairwell, if you've ever been in that museum. It's even too narrow for me, and I'm an average-sized Namibian. I'm not a tall guy. I'm also not a short person. I'm average. That thing has got a lot of design flaws in it. But not too much. If you've ever been in that museum, it's got poor lighting. The few times I've been there, I've been annoyed by always how dark it is, specifically when you get to the first exhibition floor. And then there's another exhibition floor above it, I think. And the cramped spaces. But there's so much space around the thing. As it stands there on that strategic hill. It's not a hill. That specific mound of land that's built on. There's so much land around the thing. There's so much space. Couldn't the architect have done a better job in actually giving a more prestigious display of a museum? If you go now, right now, to Johannesburg, to Cape Town, to Pretoria, to Durban, and you go look at their museums, you will be impressed. You will want to stay there just to go look at that museum. Because museums also reflect the history, the culture of a country, of a territory, of a zone. And it actually inspires artists. If you guys did not know this, now you do. It actually inspires the artists. Now, I've moved away from the commercial activities of established businesses and even the banking sector, because the banking sector is there for everyone. But since nobody wants to participate in disrupting the banking sector, that's now all of you Namibians and myself included, how about we look at the things that we actually can disrupt in? The things that are the low-hanging fruits that they call. They call it low-hanging because to them, the policymakers, the lawmakers, the business executives, the personas that we see every day. Okay, not that all of them are personas, because a persona technically is all about was the discussion on the a persona technically is someone that has a stage name, so that's technically an artist. So no. Not that any of our particular leading figures in Namibian society today, from the president to business leaders, they're not personas. They are individuals. They are people. Here's the concern, guys. If it's a low-hanging fruit, it should be able to stimulate certain particular activity. It should be. It should be. It should be able to do it. But are we doing it? Are we doing it? Are we disrupting? Let me give you another disruption exercise, or disruption template, or disruption example. So, the article back in the start of this month that my colleague, Hidi, wrote regarding some of the media companies here in the country who are, you know, what's the thing's name? They are broadcasting sports content for free. For free. But sport is part of the creative sector. And I know whose fault it is for this pure exploitation of the athletes specifically. This pure basic template of exploitation comes through from the sports bodies that represent the talent, because they are not representing the talent. They never represented the talent, and they're not acting in the best interests of the sport code itself even. They're not. For some reason, we still have a culture in this country of identifying the sports activity as, it's your Sunday, Saturday, whatever you're doing. But the person has to eat to deliver this. The person has to travel to participate. The person has to cover any medical costs if they get injured. The person has to, improve on any particular psychological distress that they experienced because the coach was, you know, shouting expletives at them while on the pitch. And this particular individual, the athlete, is not being paid for this abuse. They're not being paid for this abuse, but yet they're facing some of this abuse from coaches or even from the club owners. So the question that persists is, why are we allowing exploitation to still be rampant in this economy? Why are we allowing exploitation? Why? Why are we allowing it? If I've got a piece of advice for all the athletes currently trying to get ready for their respective seasons, specifically the rugby players, I would actually say, guys, if you're not being paid for it, don't risk it. The soccer players who continuously we are trying to find or display how to improve on the livelihoods of those guys on the ground, but the big concern has been that it seems like the club owners and the sport executives don't have their interests at heart. They don't. They don't think about the athletes. They don't. They don't. I don't know if the phone line is flashing, guys, because I thought I saw it flashing. But if you are trying to get through, it's 083-288-401. You can obviously come through. Let's have a listen. Let's hear your particular contribution in terms of what you feel disruption should be, disruption should look like, how disruption should happen. It shouldn't be like a thing of actually adding up to a negative, like what AI is trying to do, because in my case, AI still doesn't make sense. AI still doesn't make sense. It's you can do whatever you want. Yeah, AI can probably help with the monitoring systems, but the way monitoring and evaluation systems somewhere, I mean, many scenarios, still you would need human oversight. If we're going to talk about AI, to me, AI doesn't make sense. I'll tell you today, AI doesn't make sense, and AI is not a new topic. It's like the virtual reality that they were trying, to flog off to us at the, just before 2021, just before 2020. And you ask yourself, but why? Why? Look, every consumer is also not the same consumer. But you will realize certain consumers just go like, nah, man. Nah, this is not worth it. This is really not worth it. And then there was that metaverse discussion, specifically from Meta, the company Meta. Do you know that you guys realize that that metaverse fizzled out and died earlier this year? They closed down the servers for the metaverse. Because Meta thought people didn't have real lives, that people were going to spend their lives on a digital platform mimicking their real life in reality, but most people were playing the highest grossing game till today, Grand Theft Auto 5, in the metaverse. Please, guys, humans are not dumb. Don't try and sell people on an AI stint or an AI. And people will literally go and look at their real lives and ask the question of, what does this thing do to my life? Besides helping me do my homework or my assignments quicker, what does this thing do in my everyday life? Zero. Nothing. No value whatsoever. That's it. That's it. The true aim of AI is just to replace us from doing the jobs. So you can view it as an industrial development to try and lessen the burden on salaries, benefits paid to employees. So technically it's a mechanism being touted in the world, specifically in the United States, to replace workers. And it has been happening because the evidence is there. I'm not pulling things out of my neck. The evidence is there. But go and read the articles where they've asked executives about actual productivity, and the executives have said, we now want the human workers that we fired 6 months ago to come back, that we fired a year to come back. That is not disruption, guys. That's not disruption. That's shooting yourself in the foot. It's looking like a fool because you thought you know. You thought your business exists for one server to talk to another server. Meaning you actually don't know what your business does. Meaning actually you don't know who your customers are or how you make your money. Meaning you actually don't know your mission or your vision statement. The two most essential aspects in the world of business. Understand what you want to be. Clearly define it and understand where and how, and understand how you're going to achieve this. Any company that has a mission and a vision statement, it's not rocket science, guys. It's not a complicated, higher grade exam paper on when we still used to do the Cambridge system. You know, I'm specifically talking about you Gen Zs who don't know how that system was. It's not that. It's not rocket science. But yet, the South African retailers know what to do. We technically only have one retailer in Namibia. Two, sorry. One in hardware. One in basic, you know, everyday food retail. We technically just have two. Oh no, three, sorry. The other one is a furniture retailer. We only have three. Three. The most resilient businesses are all South African. These three Namibian businesses, because I don't count the retail vehicle market, the car market. I don't count it because In essence, it's obviously in, you know, in direct competition now with this massive importation from Asia, these cars coming from Asia and the Middle East, the second-hand cars. And in essence, when you speak to a good mechanic and you ask that mechanic, where do you find parts for much of these imported cars? Do you know what the supply, do you know where the supply comes from, guys? The supply for parts in many cases comes from the scrapyard, which is basically the dump site. If you speak to any good mechanic and you ask them, how do I service my Honda Fit? They'll tell you, well, we can find parts at the scrapyard. And you're like, what? How do I service my, what's that other car? That these seven seaters. Well, we can go to the scrapyard. If you ask them, how do I service some of the other particular sedan cars or hatchback sedans from, you know, that are imported, the scrapyard still stays the default answer. Because the mechanics know what has happened. Cars are being brought into this Nignamabin economy that do not have service support or parts support. Now, the other option that existed prior to them coming in, which was the second-hand car market, was becoming unaffordable for many of us, which is a fact. Many of us would not have qualified even for financing from banks to buy a second-hand car. And there was only one brand and only one kind of car that the second-hand market was actually looking for, the Toyota Hilux Bucky. Not all of us want to drive a Toyota Hilux Bucky. Not all of us want, think of the option, the first option on our heads is to own a double cab high-rise Bucky that needs to have 1,500 worth of diesel or petrol when it was still at the petrol options in its tank. Because what if you don't have a budget for 1,500 fuel? What if you don't have a budget for $1,500 worth of fuel? If you don't have that budget, don't buy that thing. But if it's the only thing in the market, then there's a problem. There's no market disruption taking place there. Adding a new thing on a menu is not market disruption. It's not. It really isn't market disruption, guys. The affordable hatchback is also out of the window. It doesn't exist anymore, technically. So, disruption becomes an issue. Disruption becomes a problem. Oh, okay, not a problem, sorry. Disruption becomes a needed issue. Disruption becomes a needed problem. Just had to clarify that. Then we need the disruption. Because it will actually generate more offerings, potentially the jobs that the politicians are seeking. The jobs that they were promising the electorates. I still believe, yes, we should still persist and pursue in achieving a highly skilled, well, not skilled, but a high, let me just rather say, improving on our literacy and our numeracy rates across the country. And also improving on, in a sense, on the standard of living. But the standard of living technically is dependent upon the investments that the public sector have to do. And please, guys, investments by the public sector is necessary. it is necessary. Investments in the public sector leads to local content policy or local content participation actually flourishing. Investments by the public sector into the economy actually leads to additional developments that actually improve the lives of us Namibians. There's a particular need for us in disruption in the property market. There is a need for disruption in the property market. No, it's not through the overall national identity or national program of mass housing or even in the build together scheme prior to the mass housing scheme. I'm talking about allowing people technically to be able to access alternative building materials. Technically, allowing them to build, to construct, and to change the ingredients of what is needed to build a house. You guys should see on the internet how architects are positioning concept homes with shipping containers. Concept homes. It's a concept. It's like a demo. It's like a prototype. Concept homes. There was another company here. I actually bumped into the guy because we know each other. We're both Catholic. His mom basically taught me in the confirmation, here at the St. Mary's Cathedral. And I bumped into him because I know he had been sort of like the face of this particular disruptive initiative. And I asked him, hey, listen, are you still spearheading this particular project? Are you still involved? He said, yes, but there's something in the pipeline that they've actually put the project on ice for now because a new development is actually coming through from the owners of the project, which are German, by the way. And they are developing something new. I saw what it was. It still is the same particular approach, developing this recycled, this Lego brick made from recycled, recycled plastic and a mixture of recycled plastic and the cement, I think. But it has a different approach as well. A house can be built within a couple of weeks. A house, a structure can be built within a couple of weeks. No, it's not the American, you know, matchbox house built in 7 days out of wood panels, which is technically a format of the it's a different format if you think about it as modular homes. But I recently then watched another proposal or a documentary basically coming through from Berlin, how Berlin, the city of Berlin, is trying to deal with its housing or mass housing approach. And its approach was allowing property developers and companies actually to use the modular home concept to build more accommodation for, you know, for everyday human living. Literally. And this is like, if you've ever seen how people stack bricks on each other, imagine the same template. You pick up the brick with your hand, you put it on top of another brick. That's it. That's literally what is currently happening in Berlin. You pick up the brick, you put it on another brick, but that brick that you just placed on top of the other brick represents a living space for someone. Not the brick adds up to a living space. No, the template of putting bricks on top of each other coordinating them in a specific design, put that now on a macro scale of a development. And all you've got is just a crane putting these modular apartments on top of each other. And inside they obviously just build the staircase, the stairwell, the fire escape, the elevator, install that. And voila, you've got a structure. A mass housing structure built within a couple of weeks. Assembled on site, designed at a factory, literally, since that is what we want, and brought to life there in Berlin. But that's a German need for, that's a German solution for a German need. They're all German. They're in Berlin. In fact, we're not allowing this to take place across Namibia. We're not allowing this to flourish in Namibia. We're not. We're not. That's disruption that we also need. We need that disruption more than we need any other disruption. We need that disruption to such an extent that it actually improves the lives of Namibians like that. It's not just about sending them to school. It's not just about telling the private sector, hey, come invest with us and create more jobs, please. No. We need the other things to also work in the economy. We need the other things in the economy also to work. But the disruption is just not taking place quick enough. The disruption is just not flourishing quick enough. The disruption, if you say it in terms of if you ask for an honest evaluative opinion, it's not changing your life anytime soon. Because it's not. And because it's a sad reality to face. I mean, if you ask the question in terms of disruption, you ask the question, for example, like one of the other articles in the e-paper of yesterday's edition, this is the article, for example, on page 5 about government seeking to switch 6.6 billion Namibian dollars on Wednesday, which obviously has to speak to, once again, one of the Namibian government's bonds that it's positioning into the market. And it's usually a question about how government seeks to raise cash flow for their particular needs. What is interesting always to look at when you read about such articles about the bond markets of Namibia is who actually benefits from the financial markets. It's the ones that have the capital to purchase and to participate in the scenario. Back in the Second World War, the American government was cash-strapped. They were dry. They had to lower the rates to buy bonds, government bonds, to such a level that every American that had a job or that had money on their name could buy a government bond. Could buy. Do you know why they needed that money? They had to pay the American soldiers that were in Europe, that were in the Pacific, busy in the Pacific War against the Japanese. They had to pay these guys' salaries. They had to pay the private contractors, the private companies that were building the tanks, the airplanes, the ships, the bullets, the firearms. They had to pay these guys. They had to pay the local content that was manufacturing tinned food and other, and the military uniforms for the American soldiers where they were. They needed money. Cash injection at every level. Remember, this is way before the petrodollar. The petrodollar only showed up here in 1980 something. With the Kingdom of Saud. With Saudi Arabia. That's all. That's when the petrodollar only showed up. It's a pretty infantile concept because it's only about 40 years old now. But the Second World War was 100 years ago, almost 100 years ago. Yes, and it was during a period of a war. And it was during a period of obvious desperation by the American government. But it was a necessary measure specifically for the government to seek immediate financing from its population, from its working population, into its own coffers to be able to pay its financial responsibilities in the economy, in the US economy. That's it. That is it. Straightforward stuff. No rocket science. No over-exaggerated words or vocabulary being applied. It's a basic thing. But today, if you've got to go look at, for example, like the bond market in Namibia, I think the minimum is 10,000. How many Namibians do you think have 10,000 lying about to dole out, take out of their pocket and just put it wherever they want to put it? In the bond market or in a stock exchange purchase? Not many. I'll tell you today, not many. Second also is primarily looking at how exposed we are. And I'm just rounding out some of the particular talking points that have direct impact on where Namibia wants to actually go in the short-term to long-term future regarding international relations, the realm of international relations. Yes, it's a good thing that the US and China came to talk to each other. And it's a good thing specifically that the US and China obviously had to meet in this past week. Specifically President Xi and President Trump, they had to meet. But from what I could see, primarily, is that I don't think the American president got what he wanted. I don't think the American president got what he wanted. That's because I'm someone that reads people's body language, people. You might say whatever you want to say with words. That's one thing. But when you see someone's body language and the person is not as upbeat as they always were, I don't think Trump reached any of his goals that he set out to achieve when he went and met President Xi in Beijing. I don't think so. First and foremost, because the tariff discussion of last year, the trade surplus discussion of last year, I don't think it has made any change also in the American landscape of things. So, we might see for the next 3 months possibly still the same tone persisting, because now apparently the Americans wanted to attack Iran again, Sunday night, apparently. But the GCC, which is the Gulf, those Gulf nation countries, the other Arab nations around Iran, apparently appealed to the US and said, please don't attack again. Please don't. Don't do it. Because there was a drone explosion recently, just yesterday or the day before on Sunday, in Dubai, close to a nuclear power reactor. In Dubai, which is one of the world's transport hubs for connecting Europe with Far East Asia, you will stop over in Dubai. If you're flying from Tokyo to London, you will stop over in Dubai. You will. Or if you're flying from Tokyo to Paris, you will stop in Dubai because you have to fly like this, westwards. You won't fly over the US that way. You will stop in Dubai. Or you will stop in Doha. So, in the short term particular discussion, it seems like the conflict in the Middle East is not resolved. It's not resolved. It won't be resolved soon. It was supposed to have been resolved a day, literally on the 1st of March. We are literally close to the end of May, 3 months later. It's not solved. It's not, they've not reached any concrete sort of like positive outcome for, you know, the aggressors, which are the United States and Israel. They haven't achieved their goals. So we still sit in the quagmire that we have found each other, that we find ourselves ever since 28 February on 19 May. Uncertainty persists, meaning if disruption doesn't lead to any positives here in Namibia locally, those pressures from that uncertainty happening there in the Middle East will persist. It'll still make our lives inconvenient for the rest of this year. The petrol price increases will still be anticipated. And, unfortunately, we will just have to live with it. There's nothing nobody can do. We will just have to live with these pressures, which in effect is all negatives for what our government is trying to achieve. Because they'll be powerless with whatever antics the United States want to get up to, they'll be powerless. They'll be powerless. There's nothing we can do. We can't change a situation that we are exposed to because we're not in control of any of those elements that are the volatile ones. We're not in control of the United States or Donald Trump. We're not. We're not in control of Iran. We're not. We're not in control even of Israel. We're not. We're not. So if you were hoping I would give you a solution in terms of if there's a silver lining in the sky, there is none. If that war does not stop today, well, yeah, you know, for the next 4 or 5 days that I'll still be here with you guys doing the unpacking, it'll still be business as usual with regards to that. It'll still be business as usual. Now, on disruption, I left the creative sector too early, too quick. But before we actually continue, guys, we've got to take a quick break. And after that, we come back. We head into the last quarter of this morning session of Unpacking the Day here on your number one talk radio station. You're obviously in my company from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. And on that note, we'll see each other just after this break.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite okoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe kike kovano hile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado ili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileco, Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Watatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, the Eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
So, getting back to where we left off, getting back to looking into the particular interest, obviously, of disruption for this particular scenario. We obviously face a discussion of how we look at the way going ahead, the way okay. He calls himself HD here at the office. And obviously the particular colleague that I referenced a little bit earlier about the sports content and the retail and the freebies that some of the other media companies are getting in terms of, you know, broadcasting and streaming the content of various sports codes. The concern that we're looking at is one, and this is why I'm coming back to the creative sector. If the creative sector, and specifically including the sports sector, if you guys don't speak up and you put a price tag to your stuff, in some cases, the participants, the other economic participants, they'll continue taking you for granted. They'll do so. Guys, I'll give you sort of like a precursor or like an introduction to what there's an event I'm going to attend later this week. It's something that, I won't mention the company's name, but they're going to host in terms of looking at intellectual property and sport. And it's actually the very fiber I've been talking about, the very fiber for economic transformation that we need. For economic diversification that we need. And it's the quickest to achieve. We have so many athletes. We have so many young men and women who are, they would love to pursue, their sports ambitions and their sports, or grow their sports talent up until a decent, you know, age of at least like 35 and then retire. Like much of what we've seen across the world. And literally this event that I'm going to attend later this week is based upon this approach. It's literally based upon it. Where it technically will say, and I know they will say it on, is it Thursday or Friday that I'll have to go to this event? I know they will say it, but they will basically say, you see, you, the athlete, it's your identity. It's your identity. You have to be paid. The moment you appear on a TV screen, on an internet screen or whatever, you have to be paid. If you're there for free, without being paid, you're being exploited. You can call yourself a public or national broadcaster or you, whatever. You can call yourself whatever you want. You are exploiting. Because if you had not paid even the club that has the talent, so the club has to pay the athlete. Because that's why I said a little bit earlier, my best example technically for all the whole sports industry, besides cricket, because cricket is technically, getting its act together, and it has gotten its act together by doing exactly what we want to see sport do in Namibia, be for the greater good of Namibians, i.e. technically also leading to, you can call it like wealth creation in a way, but technically leading to improvement of the athletes, you know, their participation in the sport. If you're doing this sport for free, meaning there's more inputs coming from you and your family to you participating what is technically now just a weekend distraction, leave it, drop it. If you're not being paid and there are cameras showing up to literally, what they call that thing, to broadcast. They are broadcast cameras. I'm not talking about photographic cameras, because that's just about observation and then, you know, you write your reports. But now many of the sports journalists just watch the TV and write their reports, because the other journalists are there on site ultimately, you know, broadcasting. But if there are cameras at your matches broadcasting the match, demand payment or drop the sport. I'll say it again. Demand payment or drop the sport entirely. Just let the sport die. Let it die an unnatural death because exploitation is taking place. I'm not talking about me or like my colleague Hidi, HD, specifically, who show up and, you know, with just our still cameras, we take a few photos here and there, you know, of some action scenes, and then we use it to write sports reports either for our socials or for the e-paper. No, we write it specifically for the aspects, you know. Yes, we do it for that purpose. The people that you've got to target are the ones who broadcast the whole match in real time as it's happening to an audience that is not paying for that content. So the audience isn't paying for the content. The entity broadcasting your match, which is technically stealing your content, is also possibly not paying for it. And the situation on the ground specifically is one of, there's a lot of exploitation and people are not working to close the gap. I was disappointed with the response specifically that, that article that we carried in the e-paper by the MISAC ministry representative, the director, Mr. Gerard Fries, who in a sense made an excuse for these broadcasters. There is no actual commercial capacity. It's a blatant lie. It's a lie. It's a lie. There is capacity. There is always a starting ground to work from. It's a lie. There are advertisers out there. It's a lie. The English Premier League doesn't go and defend SuperSport about whether SuperSport has money or not. They tell SuperSport from South Africa, listen, do you have the $8 billion or not? Yes or no? Or is it $5 billion? Do you have the $5 billion, yes or no, for the next 3 year sequence? Because it's $5 billion over 3 years. Do you have it, yes or no? They don't care if There is no advertising market or capacity in South Africa or Southern Africa. They don't care. That's their price. You got to pay it. You have to pay for it. And it does go out on like a tender. It is technically a tender, you know, to buy the broadcast rights for the English Premier League. It's like a tender. They put it out, then they invite bids. Come and make an offer. You've got to show up and make the offer. So it's your responsibility. The South African PSL, Premier Soccer League, does the same exact thing. They position a tender. They put it up. It's not the South African Football Association. It's the Soccer League, the Premier Soccer League. They position a tender for the broadcasters, and they say, this is our price. This is what we want. You come to the party. They don't care about you not being able to get the money. Because they're not going to give it away for free. They're not. They're not. Do you know that they actually had to change the rule regarding SABC? Because SABC was allowed the largest chunk to literally broadcast the Premier Soccer League at like a major discount per match. There was literally a rule between... It was a government rule that a regulation that impeded the Premier Soccer League from completely achieving its current potential, commercial potential. And it had to change back in the 2000s because basically SuperSport at the time went and lobbied against they didn't lobby with the sports ministry, they lobbied with the Premier Soccer League by saying, listen guys, we're willing to pay you this money if you allow us to buy the whole broadcast rights. Because what happened was SuperSport was literally being locked out of tendering for the broadcast rights of the Premier Soccer League. Now, they're making ridiculous amounts of money, the South African footballers. They don't have to play in England. They don't have to play anywhere else in the world. They just have to play in their league. Their talent... Their fans watch their talent. Their talent spends money in their economy. The economy thrives. There's money everywhere. Which is the point at the start of the show that we started on. How do we get the money flowing? And it's not by looking at a mine. And it's not about becoming a farmer. And it's not about moving to a different town. It's okay, moving to a different one, probably. But it's literally this aspect of looking at how do you make the money move. NDB6 is pretty straightforward. It's pretty straightforward. Probably have to read it again just to jog my, you know, for a refresher. But it's pretty straightforward stuff. Pretty straightforward stuff. Pretty straightforward stuff, guys. If the football club owners, the rugby club owners, if they just come together and they realize, hey, listen, we'd like to put money into the pockets of our players on a regular basis, every week, every month. We have to start pursuing, dear listeners, this thing known as wages. In Namibia, it's still the same salary. The downside is it does create one or other certain financial issues in the Namibian economy, which I've seen, which I've observed when you think about it. Because if you go and interrogate, why do we have salaries, and why is the whole Namibian economy based upon this end of month cycle? There's an end of month cycle. And one of the most mind-numbing things to consider is that no economist in this country has ever thought about it. Change the way we move the money. Disruption starts when you look at making the money move. It's not about bringing in more mining companies. It's not about talking about what happens in green hydrogen and the green industries and solar energy. Stop with that rubbish. That's the other noise that we shouldn't be focusing on. It's the rubbish and the noise that cannot impact the lives in the urban settings. It cannot. I don't want to hear about another farming gig somewhere about who is making what. Planting tomatoes, planting potatoes, planting banana. It's, please, those are basic things. It's part of life. It's part of everyday things. Put that noise somewhere else. I want to know, how do we get to create the jobs that the politicians are talking about? And I've given you the template countless times. It's the creative sector. 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 For Namibia, it'll be the creative sector. It'll just be the creative sector. It'll 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 be the creative sector. Yes, maybe the health sector, because it will have to grow. It'll need more investment by the Ministry of Health. They don't want to say it, but they know it. They will need more investment. But it will be the creative sector. It will be the creative sector. We need more fashion designers. We will need garments factories. We will need to start producing more athletes, more competitive teams. Instead of having a flimsy a flimsy football league of 10 or 12 teams, we can technically push that up to literally at least 14 teams with a financial sustainability component. Because here is the crux of the matter. Have you guys ever heard of the NFA introducing an NFA financial fair play regulation on the football clubs? Have any of you ever heard of such a thing? Have any of you ever heard? Because World Rugby also has the same standard for professional clubs, where rugby is professional. Have you ever heard of sustainable financial framework for rugby clubs in Namibia? No, you have not. You will not hear it because we are not serious. We're not serious. We are not serious. Yet we complain when the petrol price is about to strike. But we don't see that if that petrol price strikes, it exacerbates what's already there. We don't see it. We react to the obvious. We don't see it. We've got an immediate inconvenience immediately based upon what we have here. But we don't see that there's a bigger issue. People will already be complaining about inflation because of the petrol price increases that will actually push forward further increases in everyday goods and other consumer goods that we use on a daily basis. Yes, which is obvious. Because if you know where inflation comes from the private sector. Because the one private sector guy said, you know what, I reached profit last year, you know, let me add another 10%. And then he communicates that throughout the whole economy. And then everyone perpetuates the same particular, you know, greedy intervention. Which technically is an intervention. Now you have to work 10% more. Reach 10% more target. Achieve 10% more sales. Achieve 10% more revenue. But now everything will be recalibrated, recalculated to raise it by another 15% during the course of this year. Because of Donald Trump and his stupidity of what he's creating there in the Middle East. And it is. It literally is a harebrained idea. It doesn't make sense to anyone. Anyway. The only time when the American intelligence sector actually came and said there is no immediate threat of war is the only time that we've got an unnecessary war. We were barely getting by with just Ukraine and Russia, but we survived. Now we've got to deal with a harebrained conflict that doesn't make sense to anyone anywhere. Creates more division, more inconsistency, more inequality, supply chain disruptions for no apparent reason, just because Donald Trump couldn't tell his best buddy, Benjamin Netanyahu, hey, kalmir, sit down, shut up, just be calm. Whatever you do, don't speak. He couldn't do that. So, the disruption we want can only be found now in our creative sector. / arts and sports. Can only be found in our creative sector right now. Right now. Today. 19 May 2026. Today is the only sector we can actually develop. I'll say it again. It's the only sector we can actually develop. We need to start making more Namibian movies. We need to start producing TV series. We need to start producing, start writing a lot more, meaning books, publications. We need to make our own work. We need to start making clothes because we need to be resilient. We need to be. We need to be. I'll say it again. We need to be resilient. Disruption today is resilience right now. On that note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end of this morning's session of my Sunday morning take. Not Sunday morning take. Look at me. I'm so used to, being tuned in that if I'm up this early, it just has to be a Sunday morning session. But anyway, yeah, here of the unpacking the day. On this, what started off as an extremely chilly Tuesday morning. To stay tuned for the rest of the programming to follow on after the break. That obviously will be with Franz and the show Kuta Mosha. I hope I'm saying it correctly. And on that note, catch me same time, same place again tomorrow here on the Unpacking the Day on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. Enjoy the rest of your morning here in our company, and the rest obviously of the programming to follow on right after this.